The Cool Down is making climate topics actually interesting to learn about. They give you easy tips on hacks to waste less and save money. They have awesome product recommendations, and they can show you the coolest tech that's going to make our lives way better in the future. All you have to do is go to thecooldown.com to sign up for their newsletter. You can also follow them on Instagram. This is a topic that's going to dominate the next decade plus, and it's a good time to get smart on it. It's the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub, filtered by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page in the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. Download the app today. Bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. You must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln and the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. We're also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. Put up a new Rewatchables on Monday night. We did The Vanishing, a movie that was poorly reviewed and did not do well in the box office. And yet, Chris Ryan and I, we love it very much. It was on cable basically for 10 straight years, starting in 1993. And just the definition of a rewatchable. Drink the coffee, Jeff. If you want to experience exactly what Diane experienced, you must drink the coffee. That was my bad Jeff Bridges imitation. Coming up on this podcast, we are going to talk about LeBron James and the scoring record. I went to the Laker game tonight. I'm going to give you my full report and a bunch of additional thoughts. And then after that, Peter Schrager comes on to talk about Chiefs, Eagles, and a bunch of the NFL storylines from this week. And that's it for the pod. We had a double parter on Sunday night. And then on Thursday, we're going to do a big deadline extravaganza for the NBA trade deadline. So stay tuned for that. Let's bring in our friends Pearl Jam. All right, taping this, it is a little after 10:15 Pacific time, Tuesday night. Just came back from the Lakers game. LeBron broke the scoring record. It was a surprisingly awesome fan experience and basketball game, and memorable, and one of the strangest, fun, I guess that's a new category, the strange, fun basketball games. It was incredibly fun. It was hard not to think about 20 years of LeBron while you're watching it. The number one thing, I don't know, I've heard other people say this, and I've probably even said it, but I was just thinking nobody has done a better job delivering on the hype from an early age than this guy. Really, like, if you just said it when he was 18, he's going to win 4 rings and 4 MVPs, he's going to make 13 first-team All-NBAs, and he's going to break the scoring record, I think we would have thought that was ambitious, even for the amount of chosen one stuff that was happening. And it was hard not to think about that tonight. He's 38 years old. He had his wife and his 3 kids there. And Jay-Z's there and Denzel's there. And that's when I didn't think he was going to break it tonight. I thought he was going to stretch it out this week and take it to Thursday. Got there super early, walked around. And the more you talk to people, and you're like, oh, this is happening tonight. Like, he wore all black coming in. Everybody was there. And I think he just wanted to get it over with. And there was a vibe from the moment. The first time he didn't score for the first couple minutes. And then when he hit his first shot, everybody just lost their mind. And it was like watching somebody try to score 60, like with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, only the whole game felt like that. There was this energy of just like, just give the ball to LeBron, just give it to him. And every time he got the ball, people were just standing up, and that energy was awesome. And then Westbrook would come in and he would freeze LeBron out and drive into 3 guys, and people would get so frustrated. They just wanted LeBron to have it. But back to that hype thing, this just turned out as well as I think it ever could have. You know, I've talked before about how you almost have to think about LeBron like a child actor or a child celebrity, because by the time he was famous, he was 15, 16 and had just a ton of obstacles growing up as a kid. Just all the ways you can get screwed up when you join the league and you have that much pressure on you, all the people that want something from you. And he just was able to insulate himself with these family, with his family and these friends and some chosen business people. And just the biggest mistake he ever made was the decision. Was that, in retrospect, was that even that big of a deal? Took care of his body, was set a good example for everybody, and it all led to this night. And they had this t-shirt that they handed out to the people that went to the game after, some Nike t-shirt, but it said on the top, broke the record, but that was never the goal. And you could feel that during the game, because he didn't play like LeBron in this game. He was kind of ball hoggy because he wanted to break the record and we wanted to break the record. So you think, like, the normal LeBron game, I always thought this should be like its own stat. Like, we have triple doubles and a 27, 7, and 7. It's like a LeBron game. That's like his career average. It's a typical LeBron game. If you go to any LeBron game, he's going to get 27, 7, and 7. At least it's just going to happen. And, you know, he always lets the game come to him. I remember I wrote in 2014, I wrote a piece about whether he was a genius, which I decided that he was. And it's actually one of my favorite basketball pieces I've written. One of the things I loved about him, especially at his absolute peak, was he would solve whatever was going on in the game. And I always thought, like, he was like a queen of the chessboard type of thing, where it's like, oh, what does this game need? I'll do this. And a lot of that hinged on, you know, the quality of his teammates, which is why the piece I wrote in 2014, I was like, look, this Cleveland, going back to Cleveland story, that sounds great, makes for a great narrative, but he's going back to Cleveland because it gives him a better chance to win. He wants better teammates. He wants to win multiple titles, and Cleveland is a better chance. But what he really wanted was like toys to play with. And he's had that in various ways over the years. Never really got there the first Cleveland time. In the Miami run, there were moments like the 27-game winning streak, some of the stuff that happened in the 2013 finals, especially when the Spurs really took them to the limits and the Heat had to go up a level and LeBron had to go up a level. And then in Cleveland, like in 2016-17, offensively, he figured out some stuff and he kept kind of adding things. But, you know, he really was a team guy. And that's what I think, like, the basketball nerds like myself really loved about him. Like, he always made the right decision, almost to the point. Early in his career, you know, he took shit because, you know, he'd pass up a game-winning shot because somebody had, the team had a better shot. So watching him tonight just kind of go for the record, it was so atypical of him that I thought it threw the Lakers off. The Lakers ended up losing to OKC. There's other reasons they lost, but he was playing an atypical LeBron game, and it, in a weird way, made you realize, like, just that he was out of character because he had been in character for 20 years, which made it so probable that he broke this record in the first place. He was never a go for the points guy, you know? And I think there's been games, and he had some great ones over the years, when he really had to go for it. He had to score 40 points, or he had to really over and over again try to get to the line or whatever. And he could get to 39, 40, 41. But it was always because it was probably the best way for them to win. I don't think he ever really wanted to play that way. I think his ideal line was like 29, 10, and 12. So tonight he couldn't play that way. The Lakers aren't that good. He wanted to get the record over with. There was some really weird stuff. I'll get back to LeBron in a second, but just really weird stuff that I'm going to remember from this game. Westbrook was like unhinged. Westbrook, the whole team's wearing yellow warm-up suits in the beginning. In the layup line, he's wearing, the only one who's not wearing a shirt. He leaves right after the game's about to start, goes in the locker room, comes back out when he's about to play, not really interacting with anybody, not really interacting with LeBron, comes in, and it's just kind of like he to me looked, and I was with my friend Noah, and we both agreed, looked like he was just kind of pissed, like that they tried to trade him a couple of days ago, that LeBron had that tweet or whatever, the interview where he said, the, you know, he admitted he was bummed out that they didn't make the Kyrie Irving trade. There's only one way to make the Kyrie Irving trade. Russell Westbrook had to be in it. So this has been 8 months of Westbrook getting yanked around and the best guy on the team and one of the best players of all time. And the guy who's about to break the scoring record is basically like, man, I wish we had traded Russell Westbrook. And he just had a certain energy to him. There was a moment in the first quarter when LeBron was wide open and Westbrook just had a chance to throw it ahead to him for a layup and he just threw it out of bounds. And we were like, that looked intentional. What was happening on that? So they didn't really interact. Even when LeBron broke the scoring record, Westbrook, like it was no, he just kind of stayed away from it. And, you know, LeBron had the whole thing. The game stopped. He had the whole thing in the middle of court with the family. And then he went over to the teammates and Westbrook was standing at midcourt. It was very strange. It really, if it's not Westbrook's last game for the Lakers, I would be shocked. So that was weird. And then Davis, who I made a joke, I tweeted during the game, it was an honor to be there with two retired Laker legends, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Anthony Davis. He was like a zombie. I don't know what happened to him. I thought he was healthy or relatively healthy. OKC doesn't even really have size. And I know it's weird. LeBron's going for the record. Maybe it's hard to figure out how to fit in, but he was two steps slow the whole game. Wasn't protecting the rim. OKC was a layup line over and over again. They're beating people back door and the Lakers aren't getting 50-50 balls. Davis wasn't getting 50-50 balls. He was bad. I watched that game thinking, man, maybe the move is to trade Davis. Like if they want to make the playoffs, maybe try to get two guys for him. I know they're not going to do that, but it was just bizarre in that it's kind of the way he's played since he came back. He's had some strange things, which leads me to like the bigger piece. They lose this game to OKC. They're now 25-30. They're third worst for points allowed per game. I think it's like 118.6, which is like, you're almost like an expansion team at that point. You're giving up that many points. I don't know how Kyrie was going to help this. Watching tonight, that team is so bad defensively. They're so disorganized. They have so many below average defensive players. They have no ability to switch. They're playing like this half-ass zone at a couple different points. And you just think like Kyrie was saving this. Kyrie was the missing piece. Kyrie doesn't guard anyone either. So you could say, oh, they would have outscored everybody. And maybe that was the goal if they got Kyrie, Davis, and LeBron. But the way Davis was playing tonight, LeBron, 38 years old, I don't know if he has the ability to, you know, be the lead guy in a title team at this point. Seems mildly unrealistic when you're talking about guys at their peak athletic powers like Giannis and Tatum and Jokic and Luka. I just don't know where this team goes. And back to the teammates thing and back to 20 years of LeBron, like he's always kind of ebbed and flowed with his teammates. And I think one of the big reasons he left Cleveland was he realized he wanted to play with better people. The same reason he left Miami. And eventually, I think he left Cleveland because he wanted to live in LA, but also that team was kind of coming to a dead end road too. This is now, you know, one of the most bleak supporting casts that he's had. OKC, at least if you just watch this game, I know this isn't the case big picture, but if you just watch this game, it looked like OKC had three of the four best guys in the game. Giddy, Jalen Williams, the wing, who's absolutely incredible. He was incredible. I was so psyched that I saw him in person. And then SGA, who was just a walking bucket and was getting mauled by Patrick Beverley the whole game and the refs weren't calling it. Didn't matter. SGA still got to his 30. I don't know where they go. I don't know what they do. Does Bradley Beal make this better? Like Noah and I were driving home, we were saying like if they traded Davis to Chicago for Vucevic and Levine, is that going to ultimately change anything? They traded Westbrook and the two picks to Chicago for just Levine. Is he making a difference or Bradley Beal? They trade one pick for Bogdanovich. Is that going to change what I saw tonight? Is it going to help the defense? They're so deficient on the wings for defense and for just, you watch them against a young, hungry team like OKC tonight and it's bleak. So on the one hand, an amazing moment for LeBron. But on the other hand, I left the game thinking that team's fucked. I don't know what the move is. So, you know, could they get Durant? Could they put Davis and one of those picks and something else to Durant? Maybe it's almost like they need to think higher than like that Beal Levine level. And could they take a bigger swing or just do nothing? And LeBron broke the record. I think the big thing for him tonight was this weirdly was the moment that he became a Laker. As strange as that sounds, he won a title for this team, but it was a bubble title. There were no fans there. There was no parade. There was not a lot of fun moments the last couple of years other than that one bubble season. They looked like one of the best teams in the league heading to March. All of a sudden, the season stops. It comes back. Now there's no fans. And in general, he felt like a guy that was passing through town in a lot of ways. And tonight was the night. Like, this was an awesome moment. I think the vibe with the fans was like, I'm so excited to be here tonight. This is great. I'm here for history. And LeBron's a piece of that. LeBron delivered that. So in a weird way, kind of became a Laker tonight. I know he brought them a final. I get it. But, with Magic and Kareem there, there was a little torch pass thing. And it was an amazing record. They had some stuff where they had some tributes from his family. And then they had a tribute from his mom. And then Joe Biden, which was greeted by laughs and boos. And the guys behind us were like, Joe Biden was like, congratulations, Kareem, on breaking the scoring record. It was really funny. That was probably the comedy highlight of the night. But for the most part, pretty emotional night, pretty cool night, great basketball moment. I'm so glad I was there. And it's always weird to go to a game where they're stopping it, in this case, in the third quarter, because somebody broke a record. All of a sudden, there's 200 people on the court. And it just, everybody's got their phones out. And it just felt like real history. It felt like a finals game, which is why I showed up early, because I wanted to walk around, talk to different people. And it was like, it felt like June. So that, unfortunately, might be the highlight of the Lakers season. I think we might be headed that way. I wrote in that column I mentioned in 2014. I wrote, Magic and Bird were done before I graduated college. Jordan came and went before I turned 30. Duncan, Kobe, Hakeem, and Shaq never quite got there. All of them were great, but they were never all caps great. Durant might be a magnificent scorer and an even better teammate, but it's hard to imagine him getting to that last level. After him, you're looking at Anthony Davis, someone with an infinitely better chance of becoming the next Duncan than a basketball genius. And there's nobody on the immediate horizon. This might be it for a while. And I said, I was there for Larry. I was there for Magic. I was there for Michael. And I was there for LeBron James. And then the column ended a little bit after that. But I still feel that way. Those are the four best guys I ever saw. I saw Kareem, you know, when he was really at his all-time peak in the 70s, I don't really remember it. I remember more 80s Lakers Kareem, who's still incredible, but was not at the same kind of level. And other than that, like, you know, you think of the current guys, Giannis to me looks like he's going to be in that Duncan, kind of Kobe, Hakeem, Shaq level, but not that last level. Luka, I think, definitely has a chance. Jokic, not sure yet. I don't want to rule it out, because offensively he's such a genius. But the thing, like, I was thinking about LeBron's career in all the different little checkpoints he hit, right? Where I wrote in my basketball book, there were four Jordans, right? 1.0, 2.0, 3.0, 4.0. 4.0 was like the last Bulls Jordan, the 96, 97, 98 Jordan, where it's like not the same athletic ability, but the smarts and the know-how and just the experience. And he was just an absolute murderer at that point. There's three versions of LeBron. I think the 1.0 was 03 to 11, probably ending in that terrible Dallas series. Then the 2.0 version was 2012 to 2018. He just started to figure it out and add stuff. And I'll get into that in a second. And then this 3.0 version was this 2018 to 23 version, where athletically he's not the same guy. But the smarts, and he's like that older guy in the pickup game who just knows everything to do, all the right places to be. He could just get any shot he wants. And in a weird way, like, he's averaging more points the last 2 years than I think he's ever averaged. But athletically, he's not, I don't think, the same guy. He's stronger. He's more physical. He's figured out some bully ball stuff. But I was thinking about some of the checkpoints for him. The most important moments that kind of propped him, with the peak being 2018 game one finals, which is the best game I've ever seen anyone play in person. But the checkpoints to me, and I might have missed a couple, but this is just from a basketball standpoint. He lost the jump ball in game 7 with like a minute left against the Celtics. There was a jump ball and him and Pierce went for it. And Pierce was just stronger and tougher and got the ball. And you can go back and watch on YouTube. And LeBron came back the next year just stronger. Like that was never happening again. I felt like that was weirdly an important moment for him that he didn't get the ball. Pierce got it. Pierce was stronger. He was older. He was tougher. He had a little more know-how and he just wanted it more. And LeBron just wasn't strong enough. Came back. He was strong. Won 2 straight MVPs. Maybe that would have happened anyway, but I do think that jump ball was important. 2011, the finals, how Dallas defended him and how they exposed some of the holes in his game, because the rule was like, let LeBron shoot from 20. He's not really going to post up. And Dallas took it to a whole other level and the Jedi mind tricked him. They were putting smaller people on him, famously J.J. Barea. They're putting Kidd on him. They're just throwing off. Marion was on him a lot in that series, which I think people forget. But they just threw all these different looks at him and his brain kind of broke. They broke him. Comes back the next year. It all leads to that game 6 in Boston, which I wrote about when Boston's up 3-2 and they just break him. But they didn't. If anything, it flips the other way. And LeBron has one of the great games of his career. And that was when it's like, all right, now we know you can't break this guy anymore. So now how is he going to elevate as an offensive player? 2013 finals. That was when the Spurs, they tried to Jedi mind fuck him again. They were like, we're going to give you the 20-footer. We dare you. Give you the 3. You can take it. You're just not getting in the basket. And Zach Lowe wrote a piece of it. He did a really good piece on ESPN this week. And he talked to LeBron actually about it a little bit, but he mentioned a specific shot. And I remember this because I covered that finals and we did TV for it when near the end of the comeback or near the end of the game where they came back, like a minute left, LeBron was driving right. And the guy 5 years later would have just pulled up and taken a 17 footer. But this LeBron like didn't want to take the shot and ended up passing off and it was a bad play and they didn't score. Miracle comeback, they win in game 7. He's taken that shot and it's like he just kind of willed himself. Yeah, I think he had 37 that last game. The evolution of him from game 6 and game 7. Game 6, he played 9 of the best minutes I've ever seen him play. If you're just talking about a stretch, there's 9 minutes there. And I think I wrote about it at the time where he just did everything. Where it wasn't just the offense. Like he was doing anything he wanted on offense, but then defensively he was like Scottie Pippen in 1992. Like it was just unbelievable to watch. He was such an amazing athlete back then. Not that he's not now, but you know what I mean? He was just like, there was just nobody like him. He was like Jordan Cross with Pippen. But that somewhere along that series, he just kind of willed himself to start making those shots. So that was a checkpoint. Then I think 2016, those last 3 Golden State games where he really was starting to match the IQ stuff with the body. Not that he wasn't a genius already, but he was just solving the Warriors. And there was that, I've talked to Steve Kerr about this, that when he got the 2 threes in a row over Azili, and he just, as soon as he just got him in a switch twice in a row, and the first time Azili didn't jump out enough. And then the second time he baited Azili to jumping into him. I think that was the sequence. It was one of the times he baited him jump in, the other time he didn't. He just was yo-yoing Azili. And it was like watching a masterclass. So you have that. And then the last one, I think, was the best game I ever saw him play, the game 1 of the finals, when he's just bully balling Golden State. And, you know, from a scorer standpoint, that game, that 2018 game 1, he had 51. He had 51, 8, and 8. He was 19 for 32, made 3 threes, and 10 for 11 from the line. But when you think of the difference between him in 2011, the way Dallas was defending him versus all the stuff he added, all the strength he added, and he was just like this. Now he was almost like watching Derrick Henry running through the line. You know, he could just, anytime he wanted, bully himself to the basket. And he really bullied the Warriors in that game. They couldn't stop him. That was, you know, the 2017 is the best team I've ever seen. Them or the 86 Celtics. The 18 team was still 95% of that team. And it was basically them versus LeBron. And he was kicking their ass. And then J.R. Smith fucked it up. But going backwards, when you just talk about him as a scorer, because I don't, hey, this has been an error this week, but nobody thinks of him like a scorer, even though he's a scorer. But you think of like the scorers like Bernard King, Kevin Durant, you know, that just the people that you just knew them for the buckets. And you got a ton of buckets, as we found out today, he broke the record. But man, you go back through some of his great games. In the 08 game 7 against Boston, that jump ball game I mentioned, he had 45. He's 14 for 29, 14 for 19 from the free throw line. And then it starts to dip a little, like 2010 game 5 against Boston. This is before he started really adding the weapons. He was 3 for 14. 2011 game 4 against Dallas. This was the famous true stink bomb from him. 6 points. 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 for 11 from the field, 0 for 3, 3 points. Now you go a year later, that game 6 against Boston, 45, 15, and 5, 19 for 26, only made 2 threes. And only 5 free throws. It was just anything he wanted, jump shots, layups, it was getting it. I mentioned that 2013 game 7 against San Antonio. That was 37, 12, and 4, 12 for 23, 8 for 8 from the line. So, and then you just start going through some of those Warriors games. 2015 game 4, which was a must win. They ended up losing, but he threw everything at them. 40, 14, 11, 15 for 34 field goal. Little like tonight where it was like, I'm getting the record. That night it was like, we have nothing else. I got to keep shooting. 2016 game 5, when they flipped the series after Draymond got suspended. 41, 16, and 7. 16 for 30 field goal. 2017 game 3 against the Warriors, which was an awesome, awesome, awesome game. People kind of had thrown away that series. Golden State 1-5. Game 3 was incredible. Durant hits the big shot to win it. LeBron was 39-11-9, 15 for 27. And then this twosome, he hit these two games in a row. 2018 game 7 Boston, plays 48 minutes. 35-15-9, 12 for 24. And paced the game in a way that I don't ever really remember seeing before, because he knew he had to play every minute. Team wasn't good. He was on the road and just a game. He's just picking his spots. It was a little similar to the flu game, with not the flu game, the game where Jordan made the shot against Utah in 98. And then that 2018 game 1, 51-8-8. He goes 19 for 32 and 10 for 11 from the line. So he evolves from that 2008 game when he had 45 against Boston, mostly jump shots and free throws, to now he's adding, he's got the bully ball. I'm just getting to the basket. You're not stopping me. He's got the little turnaround. He's got that 20 footer down, and he's just got an arsenal. And, you know, I really think he was a great scorer. I know that's like, oh, wow, really, Simmons? That's your take? He was a great scorer. But, you know, I always think like Durant is a great scorer. I think Durant's the best scoring forward I've ever seen. But I feel like I haven't given LeBron enough credit for what an awesome score he was. I mean, 40,000 points is in play now. The scoring record, it's a weird record, because like with baseball, I knew what the hits record was, right? It's like, oh, Pete Rose needs to get 4,192. I knew what the Lou Gehrig record was. You go on, like, you know what the 33-game Laker winning streak was. You know the numbers. And this number, it's like Kareem has a record. It's 38,000-something. And yet, if he gets 40,000, I'm almost more impressed by that than the Kareem thing, because that opens the door for him to have 40,000, 10,000 assists, 10,000 rebounds, which I don't think anyone will ever do again, at least while I'm alive. 40,000, 40-10-10 club. Probably not happening. The thing with Kareem really gets boned by having the 4 years in college. He finished, like, his first 3 years as an NBA player, he scored almost 7,800 points. You figure if he just skips college, which was not the rule back then, he's probably got an extra like 7,000. I wonder, it would be funny if Kareem was just, if he was like hot take guy, like, you know, I would have, if we didn't have the rules were different, I would have had 46. The other thing with LeBron, he's got 7,631 playoff points. So the 50K combined is in play. And the durability just has to be mentioned. Like, usually centers are the only ones that are this durable. LeBron, you think like all the guys in my pyramid, you go on down the line and all of them had some sort of injury, right? Like, I guess Russell didn't. And LeBron, But Jordan, like Jordan broke his foot. He went to play baseball for a couple of years. Bird had the back stuff. Magic disappeared for a few years, obviously. Gone down line. Wilt missed, I think, most of the 1970 season. West had a bunch of injuries. Oscar's body broke down pretty fast. Go through each guy. Shaq missed a lot of different time with a lot of stuff. And LeBron it's like, what was LeBron's worst injury? I don't remember. Like he hurt his knee in 2019. 2015, he was back was bothering him, or his leg. I don't remember, but he just never had a major one. So the durability. And then the last thing with him that was a thing we talked about a few years ago and then we forgot is we talked about the GOAT argument. I think it's him and Kareem now for greatest career of all time. And LeBron probably has a slight edge, but you forget Kareem has more MVPs and he won more titles. So it's those two in that conversation. And the GOAT conversation is, I still feel like it's Jordan and LeBron and Russell and Kareem. I think the four of them have to at least be discussed. You have to ask what you want. The one conversation that I think LeBron might have won is that if you had five of the same guy and you just had a team of one guy and it was a bracket and it was that team of one guy against that team of another guy. So you have five LeBrons, five Jordans, five Kareems, and you go on down the line, five Birds, five Magics. Which five would win the bracket? It's probably LeBron. And then if you made it so that it's the five versions of a guy, so with LeBron, maybe you go like 2008, 2010, 2012, 2016, 2018, something like that, you actually would have a really good team. Like the 2018 LeBron could probably play center. But the five LeBrons theory is one of my favorite. If you're going to make the case for the GOAT, and as I've said, Jordan is my guy. Jordan's going to be my GOAT. That was one of the big theses in my basketball book. But the five LeBrons thing is pretty tough. The people arguing LeBron GOAT stuff, you have a lot of shit to argue. He's got the points record. He's third in minutes. He's eighth in threes. He's fourth in assists. This is all time. 35th in rebounds, 11th in games, fifth in points per game, 27.2. He's third in PER, second in win shares. Then you go to the playoffs. He's first in games, first in minutes, first in points, sixth in points per game, third in threes. Set 18 All-NBAs, 13 first, 3 seconds. That's the most. Set 174 playoff wins. That's the most. And it's still going. And I think the shame of this, whether you hate the Lakers or not, is that LeBron's team kind of sucks. And it sucked for a couple years. And this was not the most awesome way for this to end. Had he not signed the extension, I think he would have probably pushed for a trade this week, even though his son is about to be in the playoffs for Sierra Canyon. I think the rings are going to really matter to him as this keeps going, because he's going to have all the other stuff. But from a GOAT standpoint, people are still going to point to all the Russell rings. They're going to point to all the Jordan rings. They're going to point to the Kareem MVP and all the rings he has. That's just both are more than a LeBron. And, you know, he can win the greatest career thing, but he's going to need to be in the mix. It's just going to be so sad if you love basketball that you're just going to waste this guy's talents on mediocre teams for the rest of the way. And that's how this might play out. And it's because they traded all that stuff for Davis. They traded all that stuff for Westbrook, and they don't really have a lot left. So there's a lot of pressure on these next 2 days. We'll see how it plays out. My guess is they made a deal with him that they would make a trade when he signed the extension. Should they do that? Should they give up those picks? Do you give up your entire 2020s to try to win with 38-year-old LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who seems like he's 38, at least tonight? I don't know. But regardless, it was an amazing game to go to. It really was. I really had a good time. I didn't even mind that I was surrounded by 20,000 Laker fans. Usually I mind. Tonight, I didn't mind. Pretty good sporting event. When we come back, we're going to talk to Peter Schrager. Let's take a break. Football fans, FanDuel has the perfect way for everyone to get in on the Super Bowl 57 action with a no-sweat same-game parlay. That means everyone gets bonus bets back if your Super Bowl SGP doesn't hit. Doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel, if you already have an account. Same game parlays let you combine all your favorite bets for a much bigger payday. Start building your own or just bet a popular SGP already made for you in America's number one sports book. Stay tuned for the Bill Simmons podcast on Thursday. We'll be making up crazy bets like you do an adjusted Eagles +7.5, Chiefs +7.5, and bet Isaiah Pacheco to score 2 touchdowns. That'll get you some juice. Isaiah Pacheco right now, +650 to score 2 touchdowns. Throw those other two, and now we're in the 10-1, 11-1 range. Yeah, that's what happens when you do SGPs. If you're new to FanDuel, sign up promo code BS when you download the app. Either way, you'll get bonus bets back if you're no sweats. Same game parlay doesn't hit. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL and a big friend of the Ringer. Must be 21 plus in select states, 3+ legs, minimum $1 bet required. Refund issues, non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Max bonus $5 unless otherwise specified. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever. That's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. It's a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals like job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are more likely to convert, and even in some cases, most likely to convert. Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date data fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/Bill Simmons. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Start your 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/Bill Simmons. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. All right, Peter Schrager is here. The Super Bowl is coming this weekend. It is a Fox event. You're working the Super Bowl, correct?
Hell yeah, dude. I'm fired up. Pregame Sunday, I'm assigned to the Chiefs, meaning I'm the guy who's like, I'm at the team bus. I'm in the bus. They're getting off the bus. So I'm fired up, man. It's going to be awesome.
Peter, how did Mahomes look leaving the bus? Was he limping?
It's crazy. Spags was telling me as he was walking on that the defense is going to try to stop the run. Yeah, no, I'm going to bring all the gems. I'm fired up. We got Good Morning Football from Arizona Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Sunday I'm in pregame, and then I'll be on the postgame show interviewing all the guys. So fired up.
But nice.
Super Bowl week, it's like there's different parties that I'm like sort of excited for, sort of dreading, and the whole deal. It's back because post-COVID, we haven't had it like this in a while.
You sounded, I thought you were going to do a Collinsworth for a second. Like, Bill, you know the Super Bowl. Bill. There's so many parties. You just got to behave yourself.
You just this
get
guy.
Divorced.
This guy.
So you had to do content all week with no games.
Fuck.
Which means you have to go into the storylines and the narratives. There's a lot of narrative talk.
So much narrative.
A lot of putting people in perspective and legacies.
Yeah.
So what was it? It was Mahomes was like the number one thing. What? Give us the top three.
Let's go.
What
top
were the go-to
three.
Narratives?
Top three. Andy Reid. Okay.
Oh. Little Andy Reid, is he as good as Belichick, maybe? Kind of that.
There's a little bit of that. Hey, 14 years with the Eagles ended a little weird. They thought they were parting ways and that he would take a year off after some tragedy in his life. And 3 days after they showed him the door, he signed on with Kansas City and just rebuilt this franchise. Andy against the Eagles. And when Andy got the job in Kansas City, over the course of time, brought over his GM, Brett Veach, brought over Steve Spagnuolo, brought over Matt Nagy, brought over Greg Lewis, brought over all these different executives. Mark Donovan, the president, joins Kansas City from Philadelphia. So this is sort of like a Philadelphia group in Kansas City going up against the Eagles. That would be one. Number two, I think, is something that is...
Wait, can I piggyback on that one for a second?
Get in. Yeah.
It's weird because it does feel like the Reid versus Philly thing is like kind of a natural Super Bowl angle. So maybe that'll get going this week where it's like, wait, what really happened there? And, you know, my memory is, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but he was awesome in the 2000s. They had a great run. And then he kind of got the quarterback thing wrong and never really corrected it. And it seems like that's the thing, that it doesn't matter how great of a coach you are, the moment you don't have like an awesome quarterback or a good quarterback or even like an above average quarterback, it doesn't matter.
Here's
what
happened.
You're going to go 8-8.
I've done all the work on it, and obviously I was covering it at the time, and it was the Dream Team Eagles, and there was all this excitement in 2011, and they had a couple other years, and they went 4-12. And in the summer, his son tragically passed away. And it was like, all right, 4-12. You know, Michael Vick was the quarterback after, you know, Kevin Cobb got injured and after McNabb was already traded to Washington. And it was like, I think Jeffrey Lurie brought, you know, Andy Reid in. And I think the assumption was, we both know it's probably best for you to take some time. And this has run its course. It's 14 years. And the story goes, and I forgot who wrote it, Paul Domatovich, who was like the local Philly guy, he wrote it. And at the time, and it was, you know, when Andy was let go, it was like they brought him to the cafeteria in Philadelphia. And basically, every employee was down there waiting with like tears and like wanted to hug the big guy goodbye. And like, just, and he was, you know, like, no, I'm not taking a year off. I'm not doing, like, three days later takes the Chiefs job and takes them from the number one pick all the way to the playoffs. And they've gone 9 out of 10 times. So there is this kind of deal where it's like, no, I like to coach football and here we are. So that was how Andy's time in Philly
ended.
Well,
then he finally gets the quarterback thing right. Even though McNabb was really good in the 2000s. But I
really
think we felt like there was this extra level that he just never got to. And now he's actually become underrated.
Yeah.
And then from that point on, he's scrambling to find the next guy. And it feels like he gets it with Vic, but it doesn't. And then it was like, oh, there's Kevin Cobb. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Then it was like, oh, man, Alex Smith. He's rejuvenated this guy. And like, no, not really. And it all leads to Mahomes.
It does, and he and Mahomes have been fantastic. The second storyline that's been beat to shit, but it's kind of interesting if you ask me still, is the Kelce brothers thing. And this is a gimmick. It's fun. But I don't know. We know the Manning brothers are out there. They were both quarterbacks, never played in a Super Bowl. We know that we've had the Barber brothers. We've had, now I deal with one of the McCourty brothers. You can go right down the list. There's a million football siblings, the Diggs brothers. I think these guys both might be Hall of Famers, and they're playing against each other in a Super Bowl, and they are on different teams. They are both playing the same position, but they're both going for number two, and each one of their stories is really interesting. You know, I had a chance to speak with Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, and I said, you know, the Yankees in the 90s had their core four, you know, and it was Posada and Bernie, and as you know, it was Jeter and Mariano, and those were the core four. Like, they were the guys. The Eagles, whether it's Brandon Graham, it's Fletcher Cox, it's Lane Johnson, and it's Jason Kelce front and center from that last Super Bowl team that are kind of the lead guys on this team. So I identify, like, if you're telling me who's the face of the Eagles, it's Jalen Hurts. But who's the heart and soul of the Eagles? It's Jason Kelce. And if you say, who's the face of the Chiefs? It's Patrick Mahomes. Who's the heart and soul of the Chiefs, who's been there through it all? It's Travis Kelce. So I think it's still cool. I know people are over it, and like Kyle Brandt and I are having fun. He's like, wait, you're telling me they're actually blood brothers? No, dude, they're real. They're really, like, it's going to get to that point. And, you know, they've got a podcast that's doing well. Like, they're hitting their apex, both of them, right now at the same time. And I think it is a cool story. They're both facing each other in the Super Bowl.
I don't know if Super Bowl, like all the storyline hype stuff, matters as much as it once did, because there's just so much more content in day-to-day stuff now.
It's fair.
That just 20 years ago, it really felt like we were grasping for straws. I remember I went to a bunch of media days. And
dude, you took a photo. I remember you took camera shots. Well, you tried mixing it up. I remember you took all the photos.
I did running.
That was in Miami?
Rams Pats, I did a running diary where I just jotted down timestamp jokes and ran back and just typed them all out, and eventually became a photo thing. But now I feel like I feel like the trade deadline has moved in a little bit on it too.
Yeah.
This week especially, but just in general, it just seems like there's more content.
You know, those media days, and they're having one Monday night. I'll never forget. Like, I used to go as a credentialed reporter, and I was a junior guy, and I would be like, this is my, you know, a chance for me to, A, try to get a story out of this that no one else has, B, build sources. I'll go up to the assistant offensive line coach and try to talk him up and try to, like, build that. But C, it was like, that was the opportunity to meet a Bill Simmons, to meet a Peter King. Like, to me now, it's like, I don't even know you know, if that's even a thing anymore. It's just, it's at night. It's the guys are on podiums. Like, I don't know.
It's way too self-aware. When I wrote my first thing about it in 01, I really hadn't read anybody writing about like what the hell is going on here. And that was like, I was so excited to write the column. I was like, I see this on SportsCenter or the local TV, but I don't really understand it. So what happens? And by around 2005, it did feel like it started to get self-aware. Now at the podiums and stuff, other animal. Plus, the gambling piece, I think, has really changed some of the Super Bowl hype, because back in the day, it was just
crazy.
Who's going to win?
Props.
Well, if there was, like Sal and I talked about on Sunday, there was probably 50 props, something like that. But in general, it was who's going to cover was maybe a small thing. Now the gambling feels like it's one of the biggest storylines leading up to the week. What's going to happen? Who do you like? What about this bet?
How's
this
the line moving
over here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's become part of the dialogue, which is weird. All right. What's the number three story?
The number three story, I think, is this Chiefs team and what they can put their stamp on. I kind of hit on it when we did it before the AFC Championship game, but
yeah.
There's been a lot of teams that have won one Super Bowl. There's a lot of teams who have been to multiple Super Bowls and won one. And I think of the Rams, for example, the Seahawks, for example. But like, you go through the decades, and I've said it, you know, the 50s were the Browns, 60s were the Packers, 70s were the Steelers, 80s were the Niners, 90s were the Cowboys. Two decades in the 2000s were the Patriots. Like, Chiefs win this one. You're talking two Super Bowl wins in 5 years, three appearances. The other 2 years, they were in the AFC Championship game. And they're the team of this generation. You know, your son is what, 16 right now? Like, when he looks back 15. At his childhood, yeah. 15, Ben's going to say, oh, the Chiefs were the team. You know, just like...
I've absolutely hit him with a belt.
It's true, though. That'll be the team if they can get another one here. And I think the way they've rebuilt on the fly, I thought it was a very bold decision to trade Tyreek Hill. But I'll go through the numbers with you, Bill. They have, from last year's AFC Championship team, they have 24 different players on their roster. That's out of 53. That's more than 40%. 24 different guys. Tyreek Hill is making $30 million for the Dolphins, and I don't think the Dolphins regret that. He was a finalist for NFL Offensive Player of the Year. It made sense. Their wide receivers room totals $15 million this season, and they have hit on the draft. Like, it's cool to watch these teams in a salary cap era rebuild on the fly. And yes, they gave all the money, and Sean Payton calls.
Well, you kind of have to do that if you're paying Mahomes $50 million. You can't not. That's what killed the Patriots ultimately, was they missed a couple drafts.
Absolutely. And Patriots didn't even have Brady, you know, making the big money. Sean Payton calls this the Supermax deal, which is an NBA term, obviously. But
yeah.
You get to that point where you're talking like the Bills, you know, Josh Allen, I think, is making close to, you know, something like $40 million next year. And okay, where are you going to get better next year?
You just can't miss.
Have to hit it.
That's what happened the last couple Brady Pats years when they missed a couple drafts. And all of a sudden, it's like basketball. It's like what's happened to the Lakers now with LeBron and Davis and Russ. And then it's like you just basically have to get lucky with Lonnie Walker and Austin Reeves. And you have to hit like seven of those in a row just to compete.
So the Chiefs, it's like they pay Kelsey, they pay Chris Jones, they pay the quarterback. And then, you know, Juju's on a 1 year, I think, you know, $10 million deal. You look at Marquez Valdes-Scantling is on a 3 year, $30 million deal. These are all, you know, economically sound, fiscally sound deals. And they're getting the most out of all of those rookies who are making nothing. I mean, Pacheco's a seventh round pick. Jalen Watson's a seventh round pick. So I think the construction of the
Pacheco
team,
that's ridiculous. Because 17 you just shouldn't
backs,
be able to get
17 running backs were taken before him this year.
You just shouldn't be able to get a seventh rounder to contribute. And we saw two of the final four teams like struck oil in the seventh round. That never fucking happens ever.
Purdy and Pacheco. And then for the Chiefs, they also got this kid, Jalen Watson, who's starting at corner, and he's a seventh round pick. So, you know, I like that stuff. I like the construction of a team, because a lot of teams would say, well, you know, we're paying this quarterback as much. Woe is me. Like, well, no, you just have to draft really well, and you've got to coach him up, and you've got to get going. Philly's construction's cool too. In short, you know, Hassan Reddick, 3 year deal that no one was considering him as one of the top guys. He's one of the top sack guys. They got him in March.
Right.
And when everyone else sits on their hands, what do the Eagles do? They go and they trade for A.J. Brown. They go and they sign Ndamukong Suh. They trade for Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. They sign Bradbury. There's something to that, to, hey, we're pretty good. Let's be great. Let's be aggressive. So I like both these front office stories also.
The one thing with Philly I would add is Wentz became kind of a semi-sunk cost, and they acted quickly versus kind of keeping their fingers crossed that it might turn around. And I think in general, with football and other sports, you just don't see teams like admit early. They always admit late, right? There's always that extra year before you kind of admit defeat.
Always.
Like the Nets with Kyrie this year.
They
should have done that. They should have gotten out of that last year.
So now they get 60 cents on the dollar. They get Dinwiddie and, you know, Finney Smith. And it's like, well, if we did it last year before all this, who knows what we would have gotten?
Or you reconstruct the roster. But just to think like, no, this will be the year it works out with him. I think they got out of that Wentz thing not only early, but they were able to get a pick from it.
Got a first round pick from the Colts. They also fired Peterson when he was 2 years removed from a Super Bowl. And people were like, what are you doing? And they brought in Sirianni, who had never called a play in an NFL career. And it was what they needed. It was a culture change. And they hit it.
The Hurts pick, too, when you already have Wentz.
Not popular at the time.
You already spent a lot of capital on a QB with what was he, first or second? I can't remember. He was second, right?
Jalen Hurts, or Wentz was the second overall pick.
Yeah. So then you spend a high second on this other quarterback. People are like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now they have somebody in a rookie QB. It is, the team construction's good. I think there's some Mahomes stuff that I'm sure will get momentum as the next couple of days go.
He's on pace to have.
I get it. Yeah. It's early.
It's early. So, but like, you know, Brady obviously is in a league of his own, but stats wise, you know, Mahomes is doing everything that Manning did and more. So there is something to it. If he gets two rings at this pace, not that he's going to get seven, but all right. There's that level, and you do the pyramids all the time. Like, is Mahomes knocking on the top of that pyramid if he gets a second ring by 27?
So we picked the Chiefs before the year.
We both did.
I think we had to have been two of the only ones, right?
I think so. I think the Tyreek thing was looming so large, and we were just like, screw it. They're pissed off from losing to the Bengals.
I'm really proud of myself. I'm going to take a victory of that. I'm really proud of myself. I had some good zags. Buffalo was another one. Everybody was just going absolutely insane about Buffalo. I was like, wait, what? They blew a playoff game with 13 seconds left off a kickoff. Like, why are we so excited about this team? But I feel good about that. On the other hand, I abandoned it, and I thought it was going to be Cincinnati, San Francisco heading into the playoffs. So I don't even know if I get credit for the Chiefs thing anymore. But we talked about it 2 weeks ago, Chiefs-Bengals. Chiefs end up winning. Every day I get away from that game, and I don't really care. I didn't lose money on it like I did. I teased the Bengals, so it's not like I'm like, oh, man, it's not one of those. I still feel like the Bengals have to be sitting there thinking they left that game on the table. They had the ball twice in the last 8 minutes, right?
Yeah.
With an awesome QB. They knew what to do, move the ball, and all they had to do was just go down the field, and they're in the Super Bowl again, and then we're having a totally different conversation about
Joe Burrow.
Is Burrow now the guy? This Bengals, could this be a potential half-decade, like mini little, not dynasty, but run here? And they just blew it. And the Chiefs, I think Jacksonville, I think they kind of blew that game. I know Mahomes got hurt, but that's my question as I look ahead. Like how lucky were the Chiefs to be here versus how good is this team? That's the balance.
That's fair. They earned that number one seed. I think they did. People would say, well, the Bills got screwed because of the game. Well, they earned the number one seed, and then they took care of business. And the Eagles, there's a lot of talk this week, and I think people are reaching for things a little bit, but there's a lot of talk about, hey, look at the quarterbacks the Eagles have beaten this season.
Yeah.
You know, they only played two, you know, excellent quarterbacks, and it was Dak Prescott, who might not even be considered excellent, and Aaron Rodgers in the last 2 months, and they both, you know, one put up 33, one put up 40. You know, they beat Daniel Jones and Josh Johnson in the playoffs, but you know, my thing with that one is they knocked Purdy out of the game. Hassan Reddick blew past George Kittle and knocked their quarterback out of the game. That is not a freak injury. That is part of football. So to me,
by the way, this is Jeff Chow, who's been with me at the Ringer for seven.
Yeah.
This is what he said. He was like, save me the boo-hoo about your injured quarterback. We knocked that dude out of the game because you couldn't block. Because you had his backup tight end blocking Hassan Reddick.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what happens.
They didn't protect him. I think it's fair. As for the Chiefs in the Bengals game, I've had a lot of time to talk to people around the league about the officiating because I think there was outrage over that. And yeah, it was. It was questionable, and obviously a lot of those calls went in the Chiefs' favor. Question is, what do we do with this? And I, I actually like informally polled a few coaches. And right now there's some questions as to how these playoff officials are determined. As you know, they're all-star crews, which basically means they're graded by the league and they say, okay, the best referee gets to do the Super Bowl. The second best referee gets to do the AFC Championship game. The third and the best line judges with guys. It's kind of an all-star team and they're really going at it more or less on the fly. Okay. Well, I spoke to one coach who is very vocal about officiating and he said this, I'd like to think your thoughts on this. He said, the ones who are going to bitch the most are the coaches. The fans are second. The coaches are the ones who are always going to be the ones to say, what the hell? Why don't you poll at the end of the regular season, the coaches, and say, rank your top 16 crews. The coaches know the crews inside and out. Rank them 1 to 16. Doesn't have to be public. Keep it anonymous. And then the coaches are the ones who are on the hook when, hey, you get Carl Cheffers in the Super Bowl and you don't like Carl Cheffers' style of calling. Well, you guys voted on it, you know? Or Sean Hockley's calling a big game and you're not a Sean Hockley fan. Well, the coaches voted on it. I thought it was pretty interesting. We'll see how it's handled. But between not having full-time officials and this all-star crew type deal where they're picked by the league and a lot of
I've never
coaches,
understood the all-star crew because I would think there would be a cohesiveness that develops over 18 weeks. And now you're just kind of throwing people together like it's an all-star game. At the very least, it would seem like, I don't know enough about NFL officiating to know who like the three most important refs out of the crew is, but at the very least, it seems like it should be, whether it's three or four or whatever, it should be those guys travel and then you kind of fill in the rest maybe. But yeah, look, you know my theory, and I've had this theory dating back to when I was at Grantland, that I think the league likes complaints about the officials. I think they feel like people are talking. This isn't a bad thing. People are used to this.
And I had a thought like Monday morning after that Chiefs Bengals game, like we had this production meeting for Good Morning Football, and I'll take you behind the curtain. You know how these studio shows go, and they start off and they're like, all right, let's talk about Mahomes' heroic play. And I said, guys, the conversation's the officiating. Should we start the show with referee radio is what me and Kyle call it. Like, you know, just call sports radio and complain about like, do we want to start it that way or do you want to start about Mahomes? And the audience, 99% of them, after we talked about the Chiefs to start the show, were like, this is bullshit. Quit covering up for the league. Like, talk about the officials. So people do crave it. That's what they want. They want their blood. You know, they want their juice. And we did get to the officials.
It's tough because the NBA was in this spot in the 06. And I remember I wrote a really long piece about it because it was really like, it felt like a crisis where you had the officiating and Miami, the Miami Heat that year was Shaq and Wade. For whatever reason, they were just a really hard team to officiate. Wade was driving the basket all the time. Shaq is the hardest guy to officiate in the last 30 years. And how they succeeded or failed seemed to depend on whether they were getting calls or not. And you could feel it headed toward a certain way in the finals. And then the finals became one of the big officiating travesties we've ever had. And everybody was talking about it, not just externally, but internally. And it felt like something was going to change and something did. That was when they really tried to revamp stuff. And
when did the Suns and Spurs have the fight on the sideline? When was that? Was that around that?
Well, that was 07.
That one was crazy.
All this stuff changes over the course of 3 years. We get a guy in charge of the referees. Now we get the stuff where they give you the report in the last 2 minutes, all that stuff. I can't see Goodell ever saying, we're going to fix this. I think they think it's fine. Like their version of fixing it was adding the challenges and things like that. But for the most part, I just think they're going to assume there's going to be human error.
Yeah. And guess what?
That's how it's going to be.
We're 13 days, whatever, removed from that game. And no one's talking about Ron Torbert anymore. We're on to the next. You said, like, hey, every day that removes, you think they had a chance and all that. But you said it yourself. Cincinnati had opportunities in the end. And usually in these games, there's a couple bad calls. Like the one that, And he still hot on it? The Nickell Robey-Coleman with the Saints and the Rams and the pass interference.
Yeah,
Sean Payton's still like, Sean Payton's like, I will wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night and think it's not real, but it was real. And like, he's like, that is like the Minneapolis miracle. I can handle that. You know, Kirk Cousins coming down and Alex Smith beating us. Like, that one was tough because that game we had, but I said to him and I try to bust chops, but also seriously, like you're up 13-0 at home against Jared Goff in the playoffs. Like you should probably win that game anyway, you know? So it's always going to be
that
one
was
play.
That was one of my counter arguments because it was a terrible call, but they also choked and let
and
them,
they got the ball first in overtime
yeah.
and Drew Brees threw a pick and you're like,
right.
So I don't know what to tell you. But
there
that's
is
the
no
kind of
worse
stuff.
Loss than the bad call loss, though, because the first terrible Patriots loss of my life was the Sugar Bear Hamilton game.
And you still to this day.
Yeah, 3rd and 17. We got to stop. See, he nails Stabler as he's throwing it. It's it. They're going to have to punt. We're going to get the ball back. We can run out the clock. We had an unbelievable running game that year. And then the late flag comes in. And all of a sudden, we're losing. And I'm like 6. And I'm having a freaking meltdown. It's like, I don't understand. What's
Dad,
that call?
Explain it.
They only have like the one replay too back then. Now they have 40 replays that you could drive yourself crazy on.
Those Patriots teams, you know, it's right before my time, but I talked to Jeffrey Lurie for a while, doing a piece on the way the Eagles are run and all that. And he was a diehard Patriots fan. And
was he really?
Grew up, he was the guy, like, you know, you hear the stories, would listen to the transistor radio before bed, listening to the Boston Patriots and listening to the Boston White Sox, of course, but like diehard Patriots fan. And we got going, you got to talk to him. We got going on like 70s Patriots, and it's, you know, it was before my time, but I know enough, but like I'm talking about, and he's rattling off names and I'm like, but like Bill, like that is right up your alley. You would love talking to him about it.
Yeah, I coincidentally was on YouTube today watching, zooming through a Broncos Patriots playoff
what
game
year?
From 1986, trying to remember how we ended up giving a safety with 2 minutes left. And I end up watching, zooming through the last 10 minutes.
So this is
and
after
just getting
the Super Bowl
mad at,
year?
Yeah, it was 1 year after the Super Bowl. Just getting mad at Tony Eason all over the game. Just at a random day. I'm like, why am I down this rabbit hole? But that's
so 85. I love this. And I think your listeners, you probably think they're annoyed by this, but I love this shit. They go Eason to start the Super Bowl. Grogan comes in. What happens 86?
Yeah.
They start Eason as a first round pick. Like, this is our guy.
Grogan
we're going with
comes
him.
In and helps us get to the Super Bowl. And then
that was that year. And then what happens the next year?
That was 85.
Year?
Then the next year, Eason gets a job. And Eason's really good.
He is.
And then he completely falls apart in the Denver game. And it all goes to shit. He's one of the most reviled Boston athletes we have. What's the feeling on this game? The line hasn't really moved. We got to talk about Sean Payton and a couple other things, but just quickly in the game, I'm going to do my $1 million pick on Thursday.
Okay.
Leaning toward Philly, but have not come close to locking it down. I don't understand why the line's not like Philly by 2.5 or maybe even Philly by 3. There seems to be a Mahomes tax with the line and people just being afraid to go against Mahomes. People looking at it like, I can't believe I bet on Jalen Hurts and went against Mahomes. What did I do? Like that kind of stuff. What, from the people you've talked to, is there a zag? Is it split 50-50? What do you think?
I'll give it to you the way I can kind of compare it to recent years. 2018, the Patriots play the Rams. Rams are red hot off that win with the Saints. McVay's the 33-year-old hotshot. Belichick, 66 years old. Belichick has all these veterans who have been there, done that. McVay, though, is the, you know, and when the game happened, it was the experience, the veteran coaching, and the been there, done that eventually was just too much for the Rams to overcome. They didn't adjust at halftime the way they should have, and Goff wasn't good enough to get them over the top and bring them all the way back. This might not be that kind of game, but I think if there's anything going into this, it is such an advantage that Andy Reid and that coaching staff has been there, done that, has been in all these big games. And as good as Nick Sirianni's been and as good as Shane Steichen has been on offense, and we love Jonathan Gannon's defensive front and what they're doing on the back end, like these coaches, they just have not had those big game experiences. Their offensive line coach has, a couple other coaches have, but for the most part, you've got those core four guys, you've got a few other guys on the roster, they've been there, but like when you're talking, you know, okay, we're going to the Super Bowl, we've done this, we've been there, those coaches, they've all been there and they know it inside and out. And that's what I think might be the difference. And then yes, Mahomes and Hurts, the gap in big game experience, and Hurts still to this day not having to win the game. Maybe that's just the way they win games and that's fine, but not having to be the guy in the fourth quarter to put together back-to-back drives and lead his team 80 yards.
Yeah, I'm thinking about narratives. So there's obviously the, oh my God, why did we go against Mahomes narrative? And Jesus, come on, this Philly, who they play. And it's all stuff we would say retroactively if the Chiefs beat the Eagles.
Yeah.
If the Eagles beat the Chiefs,
It's like, how did we pick
Then the narratives become like, oh, why do we know? Like, you always bet on the dominant lines. They had such a line advantage. And what were we thinking? And that's always going to win. And they're skill guys. And, you know, all the signs were right there. Why did we get thrown off by they'd clinched in November? Why did we get thrown off by the last 2 months? And we talked ourselves out of this team that was clearly better. I think that would be the narrative.
They've lost one game where Jalen Hurts has started. They've got the best offensive line in football, the best defensive line in football, and they've beaten their two playoff opponents a combined score of 69-14. They have rolled since day one. They had one blip with the Washington game. Other than that, not many close games. They blow teams out. They embarrass them, and they beat you, and then they celebrate and they enjoy talking trash while they do it. Like, they are a bunch of bullies. And if you want to pick against
the bullies, we think there's going to be Eagles fans, more Eagle fans in this game too, by a long shot, right?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. Chiefs fans travel really well. And if anything, it's the, hey, I did the Super Bowl a couple years ago, or I've done that experience. Like, Eagles fans have been there too. I think I'd be surprised if it's all green. I feel like a lot of Chiefs fans, they travel really well and they fill buildings also.
Hmm.
I think that's a wash.
Be more Eagle fans. You think that's a wash?
I think it's a wash. I think they're both cold weather teams, and like, we're in a post-COVID world where neither team has been to the Super Bowl since the COVID stuff. Like, I don't know. I feel like that Tampa Super Bowl didn't really exist for Kansas City fans. Like, this is their first time back.
They could say that it's COVID Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think. Look, they travel. What's fun is you know, to see the trash talk between the two teams, because right now everything's being respectful, but they get on the field. Both those teams like to talk a little bit. So I think this is a good one. The Eagles, their coach rubs a lot of people wrong.
I love it. He's such a fucking Philly dude. It's so good.
It's like a WWE heel in a lot of ways.
It's great. He's really stepped into it the last 8 weeks.
He loves it.
They have a couple real advantages in this game, Philly. I think their defensive line, that Chiefs O-line, which is, I said this the other day, was one of the reasons I thought they were my Super Bowl pick. It's like, oh, he's finally got an O-line. Like, they're fine, but it feels like you can rush the passer on them and you can get to Mahomes. And I do feel like they have an advantage over the Chiefs offensive line, but I think their secondary against these Chiefs receivers, I think they're going to be able to shut him down. That was the biggest reason the Giants were so bad in that playoff game. Their receivers couldn't get open because they had bad receivers. The Chiefs have, I would say, mediocre to slightly better receivers, but they're not great. They're certainly not good. And Kelsey's the only guy, and they have 2 weeks to think about how to stop him. So those seem like two really good advantages. Then the flip side is, what if Hurts just sucks or isn't that good?
He hasn't had that game yet, though. He hasn't peed down his leg yet in the big spot. And, you know, you talk to people like... Gosh, he comes in as the 53rd overall pick, and immediately people in the locker room were like, all right, like, Carson's there, but like, they're kind of gravitating towards him. Like, he doesn't have that, you know, the moment's too big deal. Like, that's just not in his makeup, and he's always had to overcome. And you know the story from Alabama to Oklahoma, we've done that a million times, but like, I don't know, walks into Oklahoma, is captain day one, and the alpha dog of a very big program, filling in for Kyler Murray the very next year, and takes his team right back where they were. So, I don't think there's any thought that
it's like you at Fox, come right in,
go just explain,
take that pregame show over.
Let's roll. Let's go. I'm upset we're losing Peyton, man. I gotta tell you that guy.
Oh yeah, wait, hold on. I want to talk about that in 1 second.
Yeah.
And one last Mahomes thing.
Yeah,
because I want Kyle to maybe turn on the TikTok camera here for a second.
Oh, let's go. I'll smile. So if it goes on Twitter, I can be ready for it. All right, here we go.
This makes me nervous taking the Eagles.
Go on.
The Mahomes piece of, has he had a signature game yet? Does he have the game yet? Would you say it's the 13 seconds game? No, I'm saying like the game that you go to and you're just like, that was the game. Is it the 13 seconds game?
Yes.
Because I feel like that game was so weird, it almost overshadowed how good Mahomes was in the game.
You're right.
But does he have like his Elway the drive type
he's
of game?
He's got
because he almost had it against the Patriots. And then we came back and we got some third downs on their fucking ass and we beat them.
D Ford went offsides. That's why you won
and
that
D
game.
D Ford went offsides. That helped. That helped too.
He's had the 24-0. They're down to the Texans and Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson in the playoffs.
Oh, come on. It's the fucking Texans.
51-31.
Not
that was
accepting
a good one.
That one. Nope. All right.
Super Bowl down 10 in the fourth quarter, third and 15. He looks to Bieniemy and says, should we run it? Yeah, sure, run it. They run the wasp play. He hits Tyreek Hill. They don't lose. They come right back, roaring back in the fourth quarter, win by double digits. That was
but
pretty good.
He wasn't
good.
Awesome in that game, though.
No, he threw two picks. It was not his best game.
That's not the game either. And I honestly, I remember that game more for Jimmy G missing somebody by
Emmanuel
a foot
Sanders.
That the Niners would have won the touchdown. Right.
Yep. He had him.
So then you would say, the 13-second game, because that was amazing. But the legacy of that game to me is how did the Bills even allow that? The game's over. It was so stupid. And the most obvious play is like, guess what we're going to do? We're going to throw to Kelce right over the middle and call a timeout. The Bills are like, whoa, didn't know that was coming. So that's what worries me is like, I do feel like Philly has a better team.
What about this Bengals?
Could this be the Mahomes game?
What about the AFC Championship game? Playing on one ankle with no Juju and no Hardman and no Kadarius Toney and no Willie Gay.
He missed a few throws in that game, though. He wasn't
pretty valiant.
It was a gutty performance. He was really good, but he wasn't like, I'm not going to be telling my grandkids about it. Like, you think about somebody like Elway.
Even a helicopter.
Even Marino, who never won a title, but like he won that Monday Night Football game against the 85 Bears. And it was like incredible. It was one of the great random Monday sporting event. Like I think it's the best Monday Night Football game of all time, other than maybe Pats Ravens.
You had the undefeated Dolphins on the sideline cheering them on. It was crazy. That was a great
one. That game was amazing. It's and on YouTube, Pats, by the way, for people. But
Pats Ravens with
I don't think Mahomes has the game yet. So that's what made me think, like, I wonder if this is going to be it.
It's...
You like this theory.
I love this theory. To say that Mahomes hasn't had the game yet is like almost...
He hasn't. You just gave me fucking Houston.
They're down 24-0 in a playoff game.
Oh my God. I can't wait to tell my son's children about that one. Oh, he beat Bill O'Brien.
He beat Kenny Stills in a playoff game.
The Pats offensive coordinator in 2023. Now, it's to me, like, Brady never really had the game either.
Okay,
and then
go on.
He had Seattle, the Super Bowl, but then that kind of also became the Malcolm Butler game, and that overshadowed that, right? So it was like Brady, incredible. Like he had two touchdown drives against this amazing defense, like backs to the wall, just going to Edelman over and over again. But then they're still going
to
lose if Butler doesn't make the play. So it becomes Butler combined with everything.
Yeah.
But then he has the Falcons game.
That's it.
And it's
that's
like
the one.
Not only was that the game, that was like the game. That's the game anyone's had. And it was like, that's done. And people slammed the mic and was like, this is over. He's the GOAT. And I wonder if this is the game for Mahomes.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's even a conversation piece. It's funny. Last
but he also
week,
has 10 years, 12 years left to have the game. It doesn't have to be this year.
Last week, they win the game and like Mahomes never talks shit. He never gloats.
You know? Oh, I know.
There was this great like a little edge to him. And, you know, Kelce's calling the Cincinnati mayor a jabroni, but Patrick Mahomes tells Tracy Wolfson like quietly in his own way. And he's like, you know, we're going to go celebrate. We don't smoke cigars here. Like that was his little shot at Burrow. And
then
after the game, he was like, you know, I think the media, 5% of the media picked us. And I'm like, you guys were favored. Like, no, but like he leaned into it. He thought 5% of the media picked them to win. I'm like, no, but okay. But like, he is starting to feel like, wait a second. You want to crown Allen? You want to crown Burrow? Mother effer, I'm here. You know, I'm the dude. And maybe this is the game he silences it all forever in this whole generation of guys, because since he's won the MVP, Lamar was the guy, and then Allen was the guy, and then Burrow was the guy. Even Watson for a while was putting... No, it's always been me. I'm the guy. I'm the best in this generation.
He had two real challengers, Allen and Burrow, and then probably Herbert next year. All right, let's go. So I know you're going to lean Chiefs. I'm not even going to ask you.
Prove
to me I shouldn't pick the Chiefs. This kind of your mentality.
Yeah, I don't think I feel comfortable
picking
against
them. It's worked out
for you
pretty well.
It's worked out pretty well. I wouldn't pick against them. I know the Eagles have had this incredible run, and if they win, I will not be at all surprised or upset. I'm not rooting for the Chiefs. I just, I'm not picking against Mahomes. I just think he's that good, and I think he finds a way.
I'm leaning Eagles right now, but I also have not run the manifesto rules yet. And there's a couple quarterback rules. And I also, like, I don't have a feel yet for the nobody believes in us or any of the factors. All right, let's do a speed round before we go. Some football
let's go.
Stuff.
Fire them at me.
Your guy Sean Payton's going to the Broncos for boatloads of money. and is now going to become the Russell Wilson rejuvenator, I guess is going to be his job. They have no picks. It seems like a dumb move. Like if he was my buddy, I'd be like, dude, I know that's a lot of money. I know Denver's cool, but you have no picks and you have a quarterback who looked like shit last year. What are you doing? Why do you want to be in the Mahomes Herbert division? What are you doing? Pick another team. So why did he pick the team?
I had a long talk with him the Sunday before he decided over the weekend. And there was a lot of reports out there that there was no seats at the table for him and that it was going to be next year. And he goes on Fox and he's wearing an orange tie. And he like is talking to me like, should I wear the orange tie? Because he knew it was happening. I'm like, yes, yeah. Coach. This is the shit he cares about. He's going to make $18, $19 million a year. But like, should I wear the orange tie? I'm like, yes, wear the orange tie. Yes, go ahead. Wear the orange tie. And his whole thing was not about like, oh, I need to coach Russ. Like, he's authentic. He, you know, he doesn't know Russ that well. His relationship with Russ dates back to a Pro Bowl where he had a really good interaction with him. And Drew Brees and him both live in San Diego, and he's tight with Brees, and Brees vouches for him. So he watched all their stuff, and he's like, I think there's still good football there. But it was really about a few factors. One of them, of course, you could say the money. That's real. Like, that's legit money that they're paying him. And yes, that's enough to lure him back into the consideration. But he missed it. He missed it a lot. And he loves that Broncos tradition. You know, this isn't an expansion team. This isn't some franchise that's been like, they've got Lombardis. They've got history. They've got a fan base that's starving.
You know, signature franchise with signature. Great generations of fans. Yeah.
They've also got, you know, a two-time returning MVP in the NBA in their city, and they've got a Stanley Cup champion team in their city, and those fans care more about the Broncos than both
of those teams.
They've
legalized gambling. They have FanDuel in their city.
They're fired up. They've got it all. So like that, and then the new owners, he really got along with. And it, you know, Penner is from the Walton family and they all hit it off. But he actually said like Condoleezza Rice was awesome, the former Secretary of State. Like they met, they had a really good interaction. So he was like, look, I went
all right,
to...
So they paid him a lot of money and it's a cool city. Those are the reasons.
Sure, that's about it.
Like the owners.
But
ready
like
to get back in.
Yeah, he was itching to go and like, all right.
Yeah, I would have waited for the Chargers. Wait for the Chargers job. Just wait a year. Do TV. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to miss him.
That would have been my advice. Just wait 1 year. Chargers job will be open.
You would have liked him in a lot of ways on TV when you were on, you know, ESPN. What was it? ESPN, what do they call it? Countdown when you were there? Yeah, you would have liked it because he's competitive as shit about like the things that you and me are competitive about. Like he would check like ESPN's ratings the next morning, like the Nielsen ratings. Right. And he's like, I think we beat them in the first hour, but then in the second hour, they came back strong.
Oh, you know? That's hilarious.
He's like, he needed the scoreboard. So he's like, you know, we finish a segment and it's a goofy Fox pregame segment where there's like jokes. And afterwards, he'll pull me aside and he's like, so did you think I made a good point? I'm like, coach, it was a throwaway segment, but like he was that guy, like meticulous to a point.
So he'll be charged up. Well, he'll be ready to good. Go. That's such a fun division. We'll see what happens with the Vegas QBs. Lamar, the reports are 100 million apart.
The reports are all over the place, Bill.
I think this is, I've thought this was a wrap for weeks. How does it play out? Give us, if you had to predict one thing, you only have one prediction.
Yeah.
If you're predicting stay, predict he stays. If you're predicting he gets traded. So you predict stay.
I think stay, but I think franchise tag, and then we're in this holding pattern is what I would say.
I don't want to read that, listen to it, follow it. That's the worst case scenario.
They are obviously, you know, looking to keep him at this point, but it ended ugly. And I think the fan base is kind of, you know, it's a little bit curious to see how this is going to play out. But I think...
Plus, Tyler Huntley's a Pro Bowler. I mean,
Pro Bowler.
Got to factor that in. You got a Pro Bowler right there.
He's a Pro Bowler.
Played four games, made the Pro Bowl.
He is a Pro Bowler, Bill.
So you think he stays? Rodgers to the Jets?
I think Rodgers to the Raiders picked up a lot of heat this week. But then, like, you look at the Packers side of it. That's a $40 million cap hit if they trade Rodgers before June 1st. And it's like, why should we be left holding the bag? You signed a three-year, $105 million deal with us last year. Like, you're going to fulfill your contract. So this isn't coming from the Packers.
I like this.
It's coming from Rodgers, and he's on the golf course, and he's, you know, giving those winks to the Raiders fans, and he's engaging, and he's talking with them. And, you know, the CBS golf reporter asked him, she, you know, straight up was like, you know, is there a certain color? He's like, well, the Raiders fans are saying it, and I told Devontae he should buy me a house. Like, well, you know, you could do all that, but the Packers own your rights. And if you're talking like that, they don't you know, they don't need to trade you out of the goodwill of their heart. Like, they could keep you under a contract with them.
I'm really starting to become old man on the couch with some of this
stuff. Talk about it, because I am too.
Even like LeBron, when just going publicly about how disappointed he was.
Not getting Kyrie.
The Kyrie trade didn't happen. It's like, listen, if you're trading for Kyrie, we all know who's in the trade from your end. You have to fucking play with that guy. But it's just, I don't know, maybe you get to a certain level of superstardom in sports where you just don't think of
yourself as
part of a team structure in some ways anymore. But that's the whole point of sports. So Rodgers says that stuff about the Raiders, and he's got 52 other guys on his team. They're looking at that going, who the fuck is this guy? He didn't even play well last year.
Well, that's the thing.
And now he's ready to move to Vegas? Fuck you. Go to Vegas. Leave.
I'll say this. I think the Packers would love to have him back. I think the Jets would love to have him. And I think the Raiders would probably be very interested in bringing him, especially with the
but the Jets
Devontae
is the
Adams.
Move.
I think the Jets, to me, the Jets have not put out any. I mean, you and I said it 2 weeks ago, and everyone, you know, immediately posts it. And you better believe I was, you know, coming in there informed, and you're coming in informed that the Jets were not going to extinguish that thought. And they still haven't. They haven't put any, you know, they haven't tried to wet that flame at all. Because I think it is a legitimate option, and they've got a great setup for
it. It's going to happen.
I think Hackett is a really, really intriguing pull. That said, the Raiders thing with Devontae and staying on the West Coast and going that route, like, that could make sense too.
That's such a lame move by him, because that team has no chance to compete for a title.
Just because of the division?
The division, the cap situation for them, the position Gruden left them in. Even the Chandler Jones contract last year, like, he was one of the worst free agent signings of the year. You know, they just don't have enough good players. When you go to the Jets, especially if Breece Hall comes back in time.
Really young, really good, and an offensive coordinator who speaks his language. I think the Jets make a ton of sense.
The Jets might be like a 13-4 team. Like, you could go through their schedule and think, like, the bad luck that they had with the quarterback position, which was self-inflicted, but still.
Totally.
But talent-wise, and then the injuries and stuff, but
they still won 7 games.
I fully expect them to be good. Yeah, I think they're going to be good next year.
Yeah, the Rodgers thing you're talking about, like, all that with the players and the, you know, and the trades and all that stuff, like, it does hit a little differently this year when you come off a season where your team missed the playoffs in a down NFC. So even the McAfee stuff that he goes on once a week, he says things, but it doesn't feel like it's the same whoa blowback media reaction the last 2 years. And I'm interested to see, like, what is the trade compensation for Aaron Rodgers? Because I said a first round pick on your podcast a couple of weeks ago from the Jets, and people were like, is it even a first round pick? I'm like, I would think so.
Maybe a second. Yeah.
So I think it's a first, and it's probably a couple, you know, a second or a third as well. And it might be a couple of players. But I would think there's going to be a lot of phone calls, but they still have to eat a lot of that salary and dead money, which is not great for the Packers.
Well, also, they don't have an owner, which is the other bizarre wrinkle of this. They don't have the Joe Tsai just coming in and be like, all right, enough with this Kyrie guy. Fucking trade him by Sunday. He's out. Get him out. Packers don't have that guy. No. So they could kind of limp along and do nothing. And then it just turns into this little, I feel like the Lamar, if they don't trade Rodgers, the Lamar story and the Rodgers story are going to be like, just mute that out of my life. I don't want to know. Just tell me where they end up.
Did you appreciate Brady doing this on a Tuesday, a Super Bowl week, a bye week, and just like getting that out of the way and not dragging this on for 3 months? Because I thought that was pretty solid. And
well, my question is Fox paying him? And if they are paying him something, did they tell him? Like Greg Olsen turned out to be
pretty good,
a real success story for them. Brian Curtis wrote about him for The Ringer this week. He got better as the year went along. There's no question. I thought he was on the Collinsworth level by the end of the year. And I don't think they wanted the Brady thing hanging over this whole broadcast lead. When's Brady? Where's Brady? Is this going to be Greg Olson? What are they going to do? I think they just wanted to put a pin in it.
I don't think
Brady knows what he's doing 2 days from now. I really don't.
I don't either.
I think his whole life is in complete flux.
I agree. I think the family stuff is real. I think the season was brutal. You know, talking to a lot of my sources close to Brady and also in Tampa Bay, like, it was a tough year for him in a lot of ways. And I think him going on Coward, which is not his, you know, it's not Jim Gray on the Let's Go podcast. It's Colin Coward, where it's not like they have this long relationship. He went on with him on Monday as part of the Fox relationship, I'm sure, and came out and said, I will not be in that booth next season. I will not do it until 2024. I think that was a fair thing to do and a really cool thing to do. because Olsen and Burkhart are about to get started with their week of media, and you don't want this whole week to be about, oh, yeah, is this your last time? You know, it was cool of Brady to do that. It was also strategic in a way where, all right, let's punt this 1 year. Let me figure out what I want to do, because I don't know if he's ever going to be doing 17 weeks on the road calling Jaguars Titans. Like, I don't know if that's his thing, but let's see in a year. Let's see what you want to do. And Tom Brady, if you want to be in the booth, I think people would be very happy to hear what his thoughts are on football.
I would say it's 50-50. We see him.
50-50? At all?
As a like announcer person.
I could see, you know, can't you see him doing some studio stuff and being an ambassador and like, you know, I feel like if Brady's on television, I'm watching. I know that.
We'll see. I don't think he has any idea what he's doing with anything. Like literally with anything. I don't think he has any clue.
Do you think he's definitely retired?
No.
Yeah.
That's a common
thought.
It's not a thought. I don't think he's retired. I just don't think he found a team that he wanted to play for. And I think he's keeping his options open because he's Tom Brady. You don't turn that switch off until everybody tells you there's no team left for you to play for. Peyton Manning would have freaking played. He said it. He would have played that year after the Super Bowl. He couldn't even throw like a 20-yard pass anymore.
Do you know Brady
kept playing?
Do you know Brady led the league in pass attempts this year? His arm still looked good at the end.
Yeah, and he saved his body because he knew that team was dog shit. So he tried to get through without taking a big hit. All right, so Arizona, you're going. And yeah, we'll talk to you at some point this spring after the Super Bowl. But when you're in Glendale,
yeah,
there's a statue now of my dad and I hastily... sadly skulking out of the stadium right after the Tyreek catch.
Just a helmet
as the Giant catch. Fans are going nuts. You can see it. There's a statue of us just hightailing it out of there. So say hi to the statue.
I will. You're a foodie. Everyone talks about the your buddy Bianco and his pizza. What's the one restaurant I've got to get to in the Phoenix Scottsdale area? You've been there a million times.
It's the Bianco one.
I've never been. I live in Brooklyn, New York. It's that good that I need to get to pizza in Phoenix, Arizona?
You got to like pull all your celebrity cards. Okay. Try to get in.
All right.
Shregs, good to see you. Great season for us.
Great season.
We'll see what happens with $1 million picks, but fun talking football with you all year. Sad everybody in Arizona.
You're the best. Good luck, man. Enjoy your pick, and I will be listening for sure.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks to you, Shregs. Thanks to Kyle Creighton for producing, as always. Don't forget, we have a big deadline podcast for the NBA trade deadline on Thursday. It's going to be multiple parts. Might start putting them up right before the deadline. I don't know what's going to happen. Who knows what kind of trades are going to happen. We'll be ready. Get your earlobes ready. Get your ears ready. Get your headphones ready. We'll be there on Thursday. See you then.